Welcome to the Good Vibes Film Club with Adam Denby and
Sarah Warner.
Come on, a bit more than that.
Sarah Warner.
Like a gig. So if you didn't know, we are here to talk about some films, and they are you can't remember.
Kung Pao.
Enter the Fist. And also The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Am I saying that right? Notre Dame. So if you didn't know, we talk about these films, we go over the plot, we go over the thoughts, we go over some themes, and then more importantly, we talk about why we think the other one loved it, because we're actually selecting films that are our favourites, and the other one is going to review that person's favourite.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, one of my favourite films that you're talking about today is Hunchback of Notre Dame, and I'm doing Kung Pao. I keep just wanting to say like Kung Fu. Kung Pao for you, I'm doing. It doesn't help that I'd never heard of this film, so that I just keep forgetting the name of it.
I don't know if many people will have heard of it.
Yeah.
My friend Carl had heard of it.
Okay.
Okay, so let's dive into The Hunchback of Notre Dame. Released in 1996. Yay. This is one of your favourite films. Would you say top five?
Ooh. I don't know. Top five Disney films.
It's got a solid 6.9 on IMDb.
Is that it?
Uh-huh.
6.9?
Yeah, 6.9.
You're joking me.
Which is higher than Kung Pao, to be fair.
Yeah, Kung Pao is...
This is not that section.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I don't think you can compare the two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go for it.
Go for it. So,
in my mind.
Hunchback of Notre Dame opens up, a woman throws a bedpan out a window, and there's a puppet, a puppet master starts telling us a story.
Clopin.
How do you know that?
Because he says, Clopin will tell you.
Okay.
And he's called Clopin.
I didn't write Clopin down.
Probably not.
Anything I missed from that scene?
No, it just opens and Clopin is singing a song and he's doing a little puppet show and he says he's going to tell the children a tale of a man and a monster.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And then people come on a boat and get chased by a man on a horse.
Yeah.
He thinks it's stolen goods, but it's a baby. And he tries to throw out down a well, and he thinks the baby's evil.
You missed the point where he, like, kills the woman. He, like...
No. I didn't finish my sentence. Okay. Thinks baby is evil, full stop, kills woman.
Yeah, well, he, like, kills her. He, like, shoves her, and she, like, falls really awkwardly on some stairs and dies. And then, looks at it, and it's a baby who's, like, a bit misformed.
Okay, so kills a woman, and then the baby doesn't go down a well. And then the puppet man shows us bells and sings about bells.
Yeah.
Yep. And then Quasi has like monster friends.
Gargoyles.
But he knows that he is not normal and is scared to go to the festival. So he's in this tower.
Yeah.
Well, little monster friends.
Yeah. The man at the beginning, Frollo, is going to chuck him down a well. And then the archdeacon comes out of the cathedral and he's like, don't, like, why have you killed this woman? Why are you being so horrible?
Mm.
All the church statues have, like, seen you. You got to think about what you've done. You should raise the child as your own. And Frollo gets all, like, scared, and he's like, oh, okay, yeah, better do that. So he, like, takes him in, but he, like, hides him in the bell tower and says, you're not allowed to go out because you're all ugly and people are mean.
I got a question on here. It's like, why didn't he throw him down the well? I didn't understand that. Is that what you're saying?
Because the archdeacon came out and was like, you need to repent. You need to make up for just like murdering this woman on the steps of Notre Dame. And he's like, what must I do? He gets all scared because he's like super pious, like super religious.
Oh, wait. So it's not about actually murdering the woman. It's because it was where it was.
Kind of both.
But later on, he's like setting the whole city on fire.
Yeah, he goes mental. He's not a nice man.
Mm. Okay, so that clears one question up. So he takes in the little baby because he killed a woman by accident and feels bad.
The archdeacon makes him feel bad about it.
Okay, and then Master guilts him into being grateful and looking after him and in the absence of his mother.
Yeah, all for the emotional blackmail. And yeah, tells him that his mother abandoned him, which is not true.
And then there's a sexy gypsy dancer.
Esmeralda, yep.
And she makes money on the street.
Yep.
Gets robbed by a blonde... Gets robbed, but a blonde-haired prince helps her out.
And the He's a captain, a soldier.
Smokes a pipe.
Yeah. Goat smokes a pipe.
That's what happens.
Yeah.
Is that what happens?
Yeah, they're like dancing and some soldiers come to like seize them because they think they're doing something dodgy. And then Captain Phoebus like intervenes and they can escape.
And then a purple robe man lives in a big castle.
Frollo.
Slash sex dungeon.
Frollo.
There's all these like chains on the walls and all these men.
Oh, yeah, it's the court, Palace of Justice.
A palace?
Mm. Who are you watching?
And he wants to kill the gypsies.
Yeah, he's not fond of them.
And then Quasi goes to the festival and jumps on the stage.
Yep.
It's like the most public place he possibly could be.
They find the King of Fools and he gets sort of accidentally roped into the contest because you have to have like an ugly face.
And then everyone loves him. We're all cheering, think he's great. They put like a hat on him, a crown.
Yep.
They're like, praise the king. And then someone throws a tomato at him and suddenly they hate him.
Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense.
I think it's trying to, we can get more onto it later, but I think it's trying to say, I think as the public, we kind of get behind someone, but then we're very quick to turn on people.
Yeah.
And because he's different, they then just use him as a thing they can kind of like laugh at. So it's like, oh yeah, he's the king, blah, 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 blah. But it's like, oh, but he's like ugly and different. So wouldn't it be even funnier rather than celebrating him? We'd just like throw vegetables at him and be mean because people are mean.
Yeah, but by that logic, like, surely throw a vegetable at anyone in the film and then everyone would hate them. Is that what you're saying?
No, they're throwing vegetables at him because he's different.
Yeah, but they loved him a second ago.
Yeah, it's just showing that the public will turn on you.
Okay, so then he goes to the festival, then people realise it's not a mask and they start throwing tomatoes at him and then they hate him.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think he gets trapped in one of those little arm things.
They, like, tie him down to this, like, weird wheel and they, like, spin him and chuck stuff at him. It's not like the stocks, but they, like, tie him down, yeah.
And then Esmeralda goes up and, like, sets him free.
Yeah.
And then I might have jumped a bit, but it says Esmeralda gets frisked by the judge in the church. And he threatens her.
She, like, takes refuge in the cathedral, yeah. And then Frollo comes in and the archdeacon's like, oh, you, get out.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, he, like, yeah, sort of sniffs her a bit. He's a bit lusty for her.
And then she sees Quasimodo up on the rafters.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, come back. And she follows him to the top of the tower. And they become best mates.
Yep.
But I think he fancies her a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
But she is a sexy street woman.
She's a sexy street woman.
And then the judge is conflicted about fancying the gypsy.
Mm.
And he sings a song.
Yep, Hellfire.
And then... Judge goes on a rampage to find the gypsy girl, starts burning down people's houses with them in it.
Yep.
He's like burning people alive.
He gets pretty ruthless, yeah.
Goes from...
It's a man possessed.
Trying to drop babies down wells and then setting houses on fire.
Yeah, he's not a balanced man.
Esmeralda turns up at the bell tower with a wounded captain.
Yeah,
he's wounded because he jumps into the house and he tries to get them.
Yeah, it's like the Miller's family. So Frollo tells Phoebus to set the house on fire and he's like, nah, mate, that's a bit much. So then Frollo does it, and then they go to execute him, and then he escapes and like shoots him, and he falls in the river, and Esmeralda saves him and takes him to refuge.
And then she runs away when Frollo turns up.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no, I missed a bit. The wounded captain, and then Quasimodo gets crushed because she kisses him, kisses the knight, the captain, and Quasi's like, oh, he starts crying. He's like, I thought she liked me.
Yeah. Yeah, he's pretty gutted. He thought he had a chance because she's being super nice to him, but she likes the captain and they snog and he's gutted.
And then Esmeralda is about to be... Oh no, I missed a bit. Sorry. So she runs away and Frollo turns up, but he realises the amulet that she gave Quasi is a map to the gypsy hideout.
Mm-hmm.
So then they find it and basically lead everyone to find all the gypsies.
Yeah.
And
it's a trap.
Frollo turns up with all his merry men
yep.
to, like, slaughter all the gypsies.
Yep.
I don't know what happened to the rest of them. Esmeralda gets like attached to a stake, yeah, ready to like, be set on fire.
Like burn, tries to burn her at the stake, yeah.
What about everyone else?
They're all in cages in the square.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
Okay. And then there's a big fight scene. Quasimodo rescues her.
Mm-hmm.
And then Feller reveals that he killed Quasi's mother.
Mm-hmm.
And then sort of accidentally falls off, dies.
Yep.
But he comes out and like, we did it. Everyone cheers. And I don't think it says what happens after that. That's just the end.
Well, you just get the feeling that maybe now he can be accepted and actually live a life outside of the cathedral.
But did all those townspeople change their ways about being like thinking really shallow?
We like to hope so.
Hmm.
But we don't know. And there might be more in the book. I've not read it because it's based on a Victor Hugo novel.
Yeah, I didn't read this for. I didn't read it in preparation.
No, that's fine. It's quite a big book.
The only difference that I... Oh, no. In my trivia, I've got a bit about the book.
Yep,
cool. But I'll come to that later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so happy with the plot? Did I miss anything?
No.
No?
No.
Okay, well, my first thought on it, and you read it before we started this, is that there's a secret storyline in the songs.
There's not.
There's like, we were watching it, and you started talking about, I don't know, all kinds of stuff. Do you want to elaborate?
You have an issue where you kind of hear the music and you don't listen to the words.
Mm.
And then sometimes the plot happens in the lyrics.
Yeah.
And then you were like, what's happening? And I'm like, you just said it. You sang it.
I know, but when the music starts playing, I'm listening to the melody and like, you know, the timbre of the instruments. You can't expect people to like... Listen to that
you
particular
can.
Bit.
This is something that happens in many, many musicals and people have survived.
I don't know it's a musical when I'm putting it on. There's music in every film. There's not always musicals.
But this is a musical. And sometimes the plot is conveyed through the lyrics of the songs. I can't
remember. You know, like, I mean, if you miss something in the background, say there's a character in the background and you didn't see him, it shouldn't be integral to the plot for you to see it. And therefore, if you miss something in the music, I don't think that should... ruin your experience of following the story.
It would be the same if someone was speaking and they said an important line and you didn't hear it. It's the same. It's just set to music.
I guess, but sometimes the good ones are the ones that...
It's not Les Miserables, like, where it's like a blooming opera.
Yeah.
You had to listen to like 2 minutes of lyrics.
I think,
and you couldn't manage it.
I think songs in musicals should be more for like character building. Like Beauty and the Beast, I could follow that. It's just Belle singing about how she loves books or something. Guessed on how he's like eats a load of eggs.
Do you hear that egg thing?
It's because he's eating eggs while he does it.
See, yeah, but you see what's happening on the screen as it happens. They say these gypsies are escaping and she ran and then he's saying, look at this innocent blood you have spilt on the steps of Notre Dame, and he's saying you killed her.
I guess I just didn't.
And it's happening like on the screen at the same time. They're not just singing about some abstract thing that's not happening. It's happening in front of you.
Maybe it's just style of music that didn't appeal to me. Okay, so my next thought is that I thought the Hunchback has like a weirdly sexy voice compared to how he looks.
Tom Hulse.
No, the Hunchback.
Yeah, the actor's called Tom Hulse.
Yeah, but I'm saying...
Why can't he have a nice voice?
I don't think I had seen the film before, and all of my, like, how I imagined him to talk... It didn't match up to the voice for me.
What did you think he was going to sound like?
I thought
he's a man.
So he's sort of disfigured, isn't he?
Mm.
I thought his voice would be a bit disfigured. I thought he'd sound like the Elephant Man.
Interestingly.
The Elephant Man sounds weird, and he's got a disfigured face.
Interestingly. So again, I don't know if it's like this in the book, but I think I've told you before, there is a musical that was staged off Broadway, and it's based more on the book, but it has the Disney songs and additional songs. So Alan Menken's written additional songs. And when Quasi is talking and singing with other people, he kind of, they've kind of put it into the script that he's a bit deaf.
Mm.
So he speaks, to put it bluntly, like a deaf person.
That's how I thought he would talk.
Okay.
He doesn't, he's just like weirdly sexy.
Tom Hulse has a nice voice.
I know, he sounds, you know, like Aladdin or something, and he doesn't look like Aladdin.
But I think just because you're disfigured, you could still have a nice voice. Yeah. I don't know if all disfigurements mean you sound like the Elephant Man. I don't know.
No, I guess that's a problem.
And I don't know if that whole that would just make it a bit too complex.
A bit, maybe a bit offensive as well.
You'd have to do it, in a respectful way.
Mm.
I don't know if that is just a bit too complex for a Disney film. I don't know.
I don't think they really explained it all, but Quasi has like superhero acrobatic skills and sort of Hulk-like strength.
I think just when you're alone and you've only got gargoyles for mates and you're just hanging out by yourself and you've just got all this like open architecture, you're probably just going to be like running around and like climbing it and stuff. He's gonna be bored.
Yeah, but he's turning into like Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
Okay, well, how does he break out of like eight chains? Eight steel chains?
Because he is really strong. And
why is he really strong?
Because he spent 20 years just hanging about by himself, probably just like lifting weights, getting big guns. That's what I'd be doing.
I think he's just up there doing like bench presses.
Yeah.
What do you think? It's because he's ringing all those bells.
Oh, no, that'll be it.
Yeah.
Like bell ringing, I think you gotta have some muscles, so that will help. And then also just doing some parkour on the cathedral.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean he's up there. He's alone. He's like 20 years old, I think. 20 odd years old. There's a bit about for the last 20 years I've been blah blah blah. I think he's in his like early 20s. And Frollo pops around a couple times a week for some dinner. Well, that's it.
So he's like weirdly ripped, but then disfigured. So he's got a hunchback, but he's not like...
But guns.
Yeah, do you think underneath he's got like six-pack, but it's just like the wrong shape?
I don't know if his torso is disformed.
And he can't have had that much to eat up there. His master bring him like grapes.
Bought him grapes, and I'm like, that is not a balanced meal. He's like, I bought you a treat for dinner, and I'm like, grapes is not a meal.
That would have been a treat back then.
I suppose.
I don't even know where he's getting grapes. Where is this set?
Oh.
I'm joking.
Okay.
Although I might not have thought about it if you hadn't brought it up. Okay, so one that this ties back to like the scene about the tomato. That I think there's a lot of strong ties in this film to Edward Scissorhands, in that the general public are very fickle with their opinion. They're like sheep. And
sure.
I brought out the point that in that film as well, he's loved by everybody, and then the second one person changes instantly everyone's mean and nasty. My other similarity was that he lives in this sort of tall structure right next to everybody, and he lives alone, and he's sort of scared to go out. Again, is another similarity.
Sure.
Did you realise that?
I guess I've not thought about it much, but it makes sense.
You don't have a particular sort of taste for these types of films.
I don't know. Maybe I'll have to have a think about what else I like.
If we get another one, then we might need to confront this fetish of yours.
Fetish.
Would you agree?
That we have to confront my fetish?
No, that there are a lot of similarities.
I think you can definitely draw parallels that you've got someone who's different, kind of cooped up alone, away from the outside world, and they're kind of adored one minute, and then like you say, once one person turns, they all kind of follow and join in, and that person is kind of marginalised.
I've also got that this might be the first Disney film we actually see a woman saving herself. Because the captain comes along and she's in trouble, and she's a bit like, it just reminded me of that scene in Star Wars Episode 7 where Finn runs over to help Rey, and then she sort of just like batters those two people.
Yeah.
And he like looks around and he's like, oh, Guess you don't need me.
Yeah.
Remind me of that. And then she like runs off, and she's the one saving the man all the time in this film.
Yeah.
So she saves Quasimodo from the being tied up. She saves the dude from being shot by an arrow. I mean, not saves him, but at least gets him to help. And she takes care of herself when she's in trouble as well.
Yeah. No, she's pretty, I'd say, slightly more feminist than other ones you get. Always my least favourite is Ariel. She's just, she annoys me. But like,
In comparison to Ariel.
Yeah. She's just like a whiny brat.
Mm.
But I mean, you have Belle in 1991. I think she's fair. She's pretty decent.
She does go off on her own to like try and sort stuff out, doesn't she?
Yeah, she does go. Like, the beast does have to save her from the wolves.
They are wolves, though.
Yeah, and he is a beast.
And he's a beast. It's not a man.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't be able to save myself from some wolves. Mm. And that's not because I'm a woman. That's just because I think a lot of people would struggle to save themselves from a pack of wolves. And then she goes back to the castle and at the end and sort of helps save him from Gaston. Like she goes to like help out because he's sort of just given up, and that like motivates him to carry on. So I think maybe not the first, but I think she definitely like sticks out as she's got a bit more about her, and yeah, she can sort of crack on by herself. She needs help sometimes, but she's there to lend a helping hand to her.
Maybe it's not the feminist thing. Maybe it's more that she's lived a life on the street where she's had to look after herself.
Yeah,
like, fend off. Whereas Ariel's like, isn't she?
That princess.
A princess, yeah. Of course they can't do anything themselves. They're hampered on, and it doesn't matter whether she's a man or a woman. And my main question about the film was, are the gargoyles alive, or is Quasimodo just mad?
I don't know. I was trying to look out this time to see if there's a bit where Charlie, the goat, sees them move. Because I was thinking, do they actually ever kind of move about when someone else is there? And you don't see it. Yeah, I don't know whether it's, but then they do move, like some scenes there and other places, but I guess he could just move them, couldn't he? He could pick them up and move them around.
Yeah, he could. Yeah, they're so, like his dolls.
I don't know if it's like Disney magic or that is just his way of dealing with his loneliness. But then the goat does see them.
Does anyone ever see the tree talk in Pocahontas, apart from Pocahontas?
Yeah, she takes John Smith.
Yeah.
Yeah. Grandmother Willow is real.
I just wondered if all Disney films maybe... I didn't think about it before, like with all the sort of merchandise and stuff I've seen, just because I always expect them to have sort of like three fairy godmother type figures. And I just thought these were more of them.
They are his kind of fairy godmothers in a way. They kind of push him to do more and kind of motivate him, egg him on, comfort him.
And then if we move on to themes, I've got Inner Beauty.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's all about looking under the surface. People can be better inside than... Well, he's not. There's nothing wrong with the way he looks. He's just not normal.
Yeah, he's different.
He's an outcast. It's about being different. It's about captivity in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Like, he's almost isolated. Captive by the Purple Robe Man.
Frollo.
And... I think a lot of people get held captive in this film in general.
Well, yeah. Well, Esmeralda gets like trapped in the cathedral, and then they get like imprisoned.
They're not like taking away freedom. Just like, so it reminds me of the Elephant Man. It's like being put in a cell and a cage and being treated like an animal. I've got peer pressure.
Peer pressure.
Yeah, because as soon as you throw the tomato, everyone's like, you know, better get in on this hate crowd.
I don't think it's peer pressure. I think it's just, like I say, like, I don't know, especially in those times as well, kind of like turn into a bit of a mob, and it's just, it's fun to celebrate this person, but it's even funnier because they're different to make fun of them. And like, they kind of, I guess, initially don't see it as they're doing something nasty. They don't think of him as a person because they see him like as this ugly thing. He's like not the same as them. He's different, and it's just fun to like laugh at him. And they'll kind of just jump on the bandwagon. But I don't think it's like someone's like, oh, I don't know if I should throw a tomato. And they're like, oh, I'll throw the tomato, like as such. But I think it's just like just going along with the general kind of consensus. And
then finally, we move on to trivia. Unless you had anything more to say on the entire film.
I do have more to say, but I think it might come more into when you tell me why I like it.
Okay.
I had some thoughts.
Because usually we cover those things and then just go over them. But you don't think I've touched on them this time?
Just generally, I had loads of ideas on themes last night.
For this film?
Yeah, just like things I wanted to say. But a lot of it relates to why I like it. Okay. So we'll see how it goes.
Do a little bit of fun trivia first.
Yeah.
So this was my favourite fact. This is a Disney animated film featuring the fewest number of trees.
Well, yeah, I guess it's in a city.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can't think of any trees these, because it's in Paris, so...
It is all a bit... I tried to think when I was watching this of why I've never seen this film, because I would have watched probably...
Because there's no trees.
Every Disney film before this, probably, at least, that came out when I was born. And then my sister had some, like, a bowl with his face on it, and I don't know, I think it's just... Maybe partly down to what VHSs we got, like from from Christmas or as a birthday present. You didn't really choose back then, so you didn't have any control over it. But I don't know. It didn't go to the cinema to see it. Maybe I was I like to think that it just so happened to be that's where I cut off watching. Like, what's the film after Hunchback of Notre Dame?
When was this? 96?
Yeah.
Mulan?
Yeah, I didn't see Mulan either.
Oh, yeah, I made you watch that a few years ago, didn't I?
I just, all the ones that I didn't see over that period, when I look at them, I think, that doesn't appeal to me. Maybe that's why I didn't watch it. Or is that just coincidence? Did it 6 years old?
Too cool for Disney films at six?
Well, I don't think I consciously made that decision.
Over it.
Maybe people around, like family members, thought, I'm not going to buy him Disney. Especially Mulan, they think, oh, he's a... No, that's
You like Hercules, though, don't you? That was like 98.
Yeah, I really liked Hercules. Again, I don't know. I just wasn't in that age where you watch VHS over and over.
At the age of six?
No, eight. Hercules came out.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
Yeah?
This came out when you were like six.
Yeah, no, this one, I don't know. We didn't have it at home. Maybe that's what it was.
Okay.
And maybe because there weren't many trees.
Yeah.
There's something about it's just very dark. It's really dark, like a really dark film. It's not very green and vibrant. It's sort of browns, and you do have the festival colours, but it's like purple and red.
Oh, is that why you don't like it? You hate purple. Is that why you don't like it? It's too much purple.
It's not, well, yeah.
It's got this like icky vibe of like,
purple dress.
I had my Nana like hand sewed me an Esmeralda costume. I had it. I loved it. Loved it.
We're very happy for
it. It was amazing.
Next one?
Yeah.
Okay. This is the one about the novel I mentioned. In the novel, Frollo is actually Archdeacon. The filmmakers decided to change the character to a judge because it felt it would make him more sinister to have control over the city and therefore would not be questioned in his attempts to destroy the gypsies. There were also concerns that religious groups would be offended by the priest being portrayed as sinister and corrupt, which might have justified the change.
Yeah, I think I didn't know that per se, but I know it. You know, in the musical I mentioned earlier, I think he's the archdeacon in that, because that musical, even though it uses the Disney songs, is a lot closer to the book.
I see.
It's like even darker than the Disney film.
It makes sense that he, say, if he's the deacon.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the church, that he would keep his adopted son upstairs.
Yeah.
In Notre Dame.
Yeah.
It's a bit odd that he sort of keeps him there, but he's not around. He's just a judge.
Yeah, why don't they keep him at the Palace of Justice?
Yeah, no,
Then he wouldn't be, he'd be the Hunchback of the Palace of Justice. not got the same ring. Spin-off. It's not one in each.
It's not as catchy.
No.
And then, third one,
mm-hmm.
The opening scene in which Clopin sings.
Clopin.
No, it says Clopin here.
Yeah, but it's French. You say Clopin.
Yep.
Like Chopin.
Clopin sings. So what was it? Clopin?
Clopin.
Clopin. The Bells of Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
It's originally all spoken dialogue. After two revisions, it was decided that it was too dry and boring, and so they turned it into a musical number.
See? So all that bit of the plot and you're like, I can't follow it. They'd kept it a speech, you would have been bored.
Yeah, but now it's music and I missed it all.
It's beautiful music. Beautiful.
Well, yeah, I guess it's better than being bored, but maybe I might have followed it a bit better.
This is aimed at children. You should be able to follow it.
I guess.
It's really universal for all.
Talking about like immigrants and stuff and...
I understood it, maybe not all the complexities, but I understood the plot as a kid.
I don't think I understood it after watching it last night. Then he's got like superhuman strength and he can break through chains.
Yeah, because he's ringing bells. Those things are heavy, man.
Yeah. Okay, I want to move on to why I think you like it.
Yeah, I've got lots to say.
Oh, good, because I've got very little to say.
What? Why wouldn't you like it? It's a masterpiece. I've just 6.9. Fuming.
I've put three bullet points. Lovely. And those three bullet points have like one word next to each of them.
Okay, I will expand or contradict you.
Music.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's just... Oh, I'll go into like a big rant now, but like a positive rant.
Rants are good.
Just... Oh, just the opening and the bit where Clopin, he goes like, I can't sing it, but at the end he's like, it's just a really high note. It's
You should sing it.
No, Tra-Nam! And it's so high. And it's just amazing. I don't know who the guy that sings it is, but he hits that high note and I'm like, oh, just love it. The song Out There, I think we talked about, I came on, I was like, I think this is my favorite Disney film where Quasimodo's kind of dreaming of like going out and being with all the people. And he's like sort of running all over the roof.
Yeah.
And you said you were sort of reading as we went through that Alan Menken thinks it's like one of his best, basically. And I was saying, if you just listen to like, if you don't listen to the words, you just listen to like the brass underneath it. It's just, there's just so much going on. There's so many layers. It's just amazing. And I think for me, it's as a film and the music, it just generally gets underrated. Like I was so excited when we got like a car a couple of years ago. I was like, I'm going to buy like a big Disney compilation CD. And I bought one and it had nothing from The Hunchback of Notre Dame on it. And it had like
6.9.
Ugh. But it had like A Very Happy Unbirthday from Alice in Wonderland.
Oh,
which,
tune. That's one of my
I know
favorite.
You like that, but it's just a bit bizarre. And it had some other, I don't know.
Maybe I'll put
rubbish.
Alice in Wonderland on mine, because do you remember that film?
That's one I've not seen as much. Yeah, okay. You should put that on. I'll rewatch that. Yeah, yeah, we'll do that.
Continue. Music.
But yeah, I just think sometimes it gets
underrated.
And to me, it's the music is just stunning. It's just amazing. And That musical, I've said, like it was off Broadway. I don't know if it's going to come back onto Broadway. If it ever came to like London or the UK, I would just die. Like, so I've listened to the soundtrack and all the additional songs are just brilliant. And it just sounds like a lot darker and just all the arrangements amazing. And yeah, I don't know why they won't like put it on Broadway in like the West End, because I would just be so excited to see it.
Okay, so number two.
Mm-hmm.
I've just put France.
France?
Yeah. You like France?
Nah, that's not why.
No?
I do like France.
Do you like France because of the Notre Dame?
I did sing in it. I went on a school trip and we sang in it.
Mm-hmm.
That was nice.
No? Okay.
I mean, as Paris as a city, I think I would go again. I've been a couple of times when I was younger. It's not my favourite city I've been to.
Mm.
I do like France and like French culture, but I wouldn't say that's why I love this film.
Okay. Then number three, I've got The Moral Lesson.
The Moral Lesson.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like you said, it's about inner beauty, and had the whole thing about here's a tale of a monster and a man, who's the monster and who's the man, because you've got...
Where did it say that?
Oh. Here is a riddle to guess if you can, sing the bells of Notre Dame. Who is the monster and who is the man?
This is going to be the opening.
Sing
to
the bells, 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 bells. That bit. And then at the end it says...
That's good.
It does a reprise at the end.
Mm.
And it says about... Here is a riddle to guess if you can. What makes a monster and what makes a man?
Because
you've got Frollo, who is like super religious... like dead serious, really pious, and takes Quasimodo in, but he's just got this just obsessive like pursuing of the gypsies and what he thinks is sort of moral cleanliness, and they just need to be gone. But he's sort of that very kind of very over pious, just really negative and fearful of everything. And it's just, it's amazing. He kind of tries to teach Quasimodo that he should be afraid of everything as well. But despite that, he's still a very gentle and loving person.
Plays with birds.
He's got bird friends. He's got the little bird friend. He's got his gargoyle friends. And, you know, initially he's kind of a bit wary of Esmeralda, but he's not like nasty to her.
Mm.
And she's like, oh, did he tell you like we're all horrible? She's like, you know, there's good and bad in everyone. Because Frollo's told Quasimodo as well that he's like deformed and ugly and no one will be nice to him. And he's just told him like, if you go out there, everyone's just going to like be horrible to you. And they are initially with, you know, like the tomato throwing.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just sort of, I think, showing if you live kind of in this really negative, fearful way, you're never going to really experience like love and happiness. You've got to kind of be open. And I think, I don't know if I'm reading too much into it, because obviously this is a I think there's a lot in this film for adults, and it is quite dark. And there's certainly bits as a kid I didn't get, and then I understood as an adult. But I think, because it is kind of targeted at children, and, you know, the bit at the end where they come out of the cathedral and he's dead scared and that little girl goes up to him and she puts her hands on his face.
The bit where you cry.
Don't laugh. Yes, I cry. But it's sort of saying simply that if I can, because children are kind of innocent and kind of maybe not cynical and like ruined by the world yet, but if she can kind of just see him and accept him as a person and knows he's done this good, and kids watching this film can kind of acknowledge that and understand that it's what's inside that counts, then maybe they'll just go out into the world and be nicer people.
Maybe.
So it's just showing that kind of acceptance, and you have to know someone before you judge them and what's on the inside. Because, yeah, he was this sort of super, because he was really religious, he just thought, well, you know, I'm trying to get rid of these wicked people, I'm good. And then his view of the world just got so distorted that he was just sort of fearful and hated everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my big rant. I thought you were going to say
it was more about that bit about the monster and the man,
mm-hmm.
that you've got someone who looks maybe like a monster, but is not really kind.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you got a man who looks like a man, but he's a monster inside. And that it doesn't really matter how you look on the outside. You can be evil inside.
Yeah. Or nice inside.
Or nice inside.
Yeah, exactly. Which is an important message for everyone.
Okay. That's the... Unless you've got anything else to say, any more rants?
I think something else I do like about it as well, that you didn't mention, is, like I said, it has that kind of darkness where... Like, I was watching, there's that whole bit where they're like in the Palace of Justice and he's like, oh, leave spaces between the lashings. So yeah. It's got like torture in there and burning at the stake and like sexual desire, because Frollo is like horny for Esmeralda and he's really conflicted by this, because he's like, oh, I hate her, but I want to like bang her. And he's just like dead confused. And you're watching it as a kid, just like this Hellfire song, and you're like, uh-huh. And then you watch it again when you're like older and you're like, oh, shit. It's like... So I like that.
Why
it's
got... Why is he conflicted? Because of his religion?
Yeah, and he hates gypsies, and he thinks they're all just horrible, like, immoral people, but then he really wants to shag her.
Yeah.
So I like that it's got this darkness and this complexity that will appeal to adults and children. And it's, I just think... And, like, the musical and the book are a lot darker. I think in the musical version and in the book, Esmeralda actually dies.
Oh, right.
I think that's what happens in the book.
Oh, that'd be a bit sad.
Yeah. So, I mean, they didn't have that in the Disney film. But it is quite dark. And it's just all the kind of the sexual stuff. It's like, a bit different. I think that was pretty much all I wanted to say.
Good. And out of 10, you would give it?
10!
6.9.
One thing that does bug me about it is... I think maybe it was always like this, but you just didn't notice on the VHS. You know all the bits you were saying about the crowds where you kind of go a row back? All the front row are like the hand-drawn animation, and then behind it's all these sort of just CGI people with like blank faces kind of just waving.
Yeah.
So when we're watching it on our big TV in Blu-ray, they like really stick out.
They're like crash dummies.
Yeah.
And there was a bit of trivia on that, but I didn't pick it out because we'd already spoken about it.
Yeah.
So that's everything to do with... The Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yeah.
And now we're going to move on to another film, which is one of my favourites. And Sarah's going to talk us through.
I don't know why.
You don't know why? Well, you better have some good answers.
Yeah.
Okay. So you ready for talk about Kung Pao.
Kung Pao.
Laptop. Sorry. Kung Pao.
Enter the fist.
Where to start?
Where to start? So you put this on the list and I was like, what is that? I never even heard of it, let alone, I've known you for 10 years. I never know this is one of your favourite films. Never heard of it. And then I was like, what is it about? Like, what genre is it? And I was trying to look it up and you're like, no, just wait. Just wait and watch it and see.
But you were really excited, weren't you?
I was curious. And basically, I'll just say that the concept, I think I'll say what the kind of the concept is first, and then I'll go into the plot.
Maybe.
Okay. So basically, this guy, Steve Odekirk, sorry if I'm saying that wrong.
Steve, if you're listening. Go on.
Has basically taken footage from a kung fu movie from 1976 called Tiger and Crane Fists, and sometimes called Savage Killers.
No, I didn't know that.
It's just, oh, okay.
Could have kept that for the trivia.
It's not really trivia. It's like, well, that's just what it is. So he's basically taken this film, and the star of the film, Steve, has kind of inserted himself into the film. So it's kind of, he's put in with this all this old footage, and then they've dubbed over it. So I think it's kind of spoofing when they'd have those Asian films be dubbed into English, and the dubbing was just really bad and just really out of time. So it's only him and one of the other character that are not from the original film. The lady with one boob. I think she's called Woa. She's got one boob.
Oh, and the guy who with the boombox.
And with the boombox. I don't think he says anything. So, but they wrote kind of like just a gibberish script and said that, and then dubbed over it.
Yeah.
With like completely different. So that's when I first started watching this, because I was like, it's from like 2002. Yeah. But then it was like old, and I was like, what is this? We're just watching it. I was like, what's going on? So that's kind of the concept. So you've got this old film with this guy, Steve, in the early noughties inserted in, and he does all the voices, like all the dubbing over the other actors.
Oh, does he?
Yeah.
What, is it just him?
Yeah. Except for the lady with one boob. They're all Steve, apart from that.
Ah, so it's quite a cheap film to make then.
It cost $10 million, I think.
Whoa.
And made $17 million at the box office.
So here. Well,
it's a profit. It got ripped to shreds by critics, I think.
No, it's just a guy voicing over some footage. I wouldn't be too heartbroken.
It's very silly. It's a very silly film.
I was 12.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, so the plot. We open up, we're in a hut, I guess, somewhere in Asia.
Doesn't matter. It's a hut somewhere.
It's a kung fu film. I think that the original film, the star of it's from Hong Kong, so say a hut maybe.
Assume Hong Kong.
Hong Kong or China or something. Yeah. Anyway, there's a hut. You see a family in there, and they've got a baby, and they're kind of being all like secretive, and they hear these men coming, and they're like, shh, gotta be quiet, and they like put out the candles. But then these men come in, and they're like assassins, and they kill all the family. And then this guy goes to kill the baby. And then this baby just starts doing kung fu with this man. Mm-hmm. And it's like this really creepy CGI baby. Obviously, this bit was like inserted. This wasn't in the 1976 film. And it's just very silly, this baby doing kung fu.
Well, yeah, but it's not all CGI. The bits of it where it's a puppet.
Okay.
And also,
and some of it where it is a baby.
I should point out, you know, watching this on VHS to then up to HD,
yeah, again,
you know, on our TV, it's a big difference.
Yeah, I mean, the baby looked disturbing. It looked kind of like from The Sims 2 or something.
I mean, I kind of find it funnier now that you can see how low like CGI quality, yeah. So he starts fighting with him. He pees on him.
Yeah, it's weird. And I was like, what is this film? And then the main kind of assassin guy kind of escapes from the house, sets the house on fire, thinks he's killed the baby.
Yeah.
But then the baby manages to roll out of the house. And then there's this bit where he's just rolling down this hill, like going like, ooh, 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 like this baby. And it's quite funny. And then he gets onto this path. And then this woman like sees him. She's like, oh, what a cute baby. And then she picks him up and then just tosses him back down the hill, and he keeps rolling. And
That's the best bit from the whole film.
It did have moments where it was funny. It had some bits where I was just like, this is stupid.
But you've got to think that from that footage where probably she does find the baby on the side of the road, that's from a film where that means something, is she probably picks him up and takes him home.
And they're like,
and what can we do with this to make it funny?
Yeah.
And genius.
Yeah.
I mean, no, I haven't really defended myself against why I like it yet. But
no, we'll get to that. We'll get to that. I've got to figure out why you like it? Because you're right, that bit subverts your expectations, because you're like, oh, like this woman is going to adopt this baby because his family's all been killed, but then she just rolls him down the hill. It's quite funny. And then after that, you basically then see the baby grown up, and it says he's been like wandering for years and he's been raised by like rodents or something, just like out and about. And it's Steve Odekirk, who's like just a white guy with big hair in this film. This like
in the kung fu
in
film.
In this kung fu film. And basically he wants revenge on the people that killed his family, and he decides he kind of needs to train up to do this. And he finds this guy called Master Tang, and he kind of goes training there, and Master Tang's just sort of coughing all the time, looks really sick.
He's swallowing butterflies, isn't he?
Yeah, there's a bit where they like, I guess, animate like a little moth, and he's walking around because the footage, he keeps coughing, so they just keep making it look like he's swallowed this little moth, which was quite amusing. So he's like training with him, and he meets this lady called Woa, who's got one boob, and you can see it's kind of just this prosthetic like chest piece that's been put on her chest that's got one boob. I don't get, she just came in and said like, don't rush into the fight. She served no purpose.
I think it was just a joke that she had one boob.
That's stupid. I hated it. It wasn't funny. She served no purpose. Didn't like it. Still on plot. Sorry. And then he meets Master Payne, who is the guy he realized actually was like the head of the group that killed his family years before. Yeah. But Master Payne now wants to go by the name Betty.
Betty.
And there's this whole joke about him being called Betty. And then it just goes on. He goes through training and he confronts Betty. And I think Betty like injures Master Tang and his other friends. There's this lady at the training place that wants to shag him.
Lady?
Ling, the woman with like the curly hair on her face that
wee wee wee.
Yeah, she just makes all these weird noises. Well, Steve makes noises for her.
It's like Miss Piggy.
Yeah, she sounded like Miss Piggy. Yes. And so Master Payne / Betty sort of nearly kills all them, and then the guy, I said the baby, I should say actually, is called like the Chosen One.
Yeah,
that's his name.
That's why he was trying to kill
him. That's quite important. That's why the assassins, yeah, were trying to kill him. He doesn't have a name. He's just called the Chosen One.
Yeah.
It's very silly. And eventually Master Payne's got these sort of triangle things in him, and he thinks they're like the source of his power. So then he starts practicing how he can like take these triangles out.
Yeah.
And then they have a big fight. And Master Payne / Betty works for the evil council, and they turn up at this big fight, and they're actually French aliens.
Yeah.
Which is stupid.
I know you like French stuff, so I thought you'd like this bit.
Made no sense. And then they give Payne powers, and he sort of defeats the Chosen One. But also something else I've missed, the Chosen One, kind of one of his weird quirks is on his tongue, he's got like this little face called Tungi.
Yeah.
And when he gets out, it sort of goes like, I don't know. He's got this face on his tongue. And so he gets out Tungi, and Tungi kind of like extends and like defeats these aliens, and all is well.
Yep.
Essentially, that's the plot.
Okay.
Yeah. My thoughts.
Oh, you got some thoughts?
So, like I said, there were bits that were funny. Like the bit with the rolling the baby down the hill. That was funny. I like when they had fights, there was just a random guy that had been sort of put in the footage with a boombox. I found that quite amusing.
Yeah.
There's a bit where they're kind of walking through the training place and they're all eating Taco Bell. And it's like this product placement. Obviously, it's supposed to be in like ancient China or something. Mm. And they're all eating Taco Bell. I found that quite funny. The whole kind of concept of the lip reading, the dubbing, because I know we love like the bad lip reading videos and stuff. But I do find that amusing. You know, there's a bit where you can see someone's mouth sort of going blah, 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 and then the speech over the top goes like, yes, thank you. Like that kind of stuff's fun. But then there was just a lot.
You think the concept is better than the actual film?
Yeah. There's just all these bits for ages where they're kind of doing like the stereotypical kind of, I say like kung fu noises, and it's like all the like, you know, I don't want to do it in case people think I'm like racist.
When? What are they doing?
I think they're just training, but then because the main guy is just this like white guy going like, what? And like just over and over and over. And there's like the one boob woman. And
you mean there's a lot of sort of schoolboy humour.
Yeah, and a lot of it just, like, doesn't hold up for me. It's just silly. The whole bit, he goes and fights this cow, this, like, CGI cow. That I think they say he's kind of like Master Payne's sidekick, so you have to go and defeat the cow or something. And he goes and fights this cow, and the CGI is horrible, and he's got these massive udders, and he's squirting milk at him. Yeah. And then the chosen one is, like, biting the cow's teat, and I just wanted it to be over. I was like, this is just stupid. It's just not funny.
Okay.
But like I say, there were bits of it I did find funny.
You didn't like the bit where he dodges the bullets?
Yeah, it has some parodies of things, like, obviously, martial arts films, it's sort of parody of, like, those old films and, like, the bad English dubbing. The Matrix, there's a bit where he's shooting the milk and he does the bending backwards with the slow motion. Mm. It spoofs the Lion King. It's a bit where he starts, like, talking to the sky and there's a guy who's not called Mufasa, but something similar.
It was like a ninja Mufasa. Sort of.
Yeah. So that I found that slightly amusing.
Any more thoughts? I don't think you're going to get any themes out of this either.
I wrote theme as like parody. That's not really a theme. That's just...
No, I think it is in this context of this film. Well,
it is a parody. I think it's a good film. Probably, yeah, about the age you would have seen it, about 12 to 15. I think you'd probably find it hilarious. And probably if you're high on marijuana, I think you'd find it hilarious.
Probably.
There were bits of it, like I say, I like the concept. And there were bits of it I found amusing. I did laugh. Oh, there was another bit I found funny. I can't think now.
Was it the big butts?
Was that on the boombox?
Yeah.
Yeah, just the bits of the boombox, like, I thought were just weird. They were funny. And it had a lot of sort of very, like, over-the-top comical violence, which, again, is not really my cup of tea, but I imagine if you're, like, a 12-year-old boy, it might be quite funny. This is a bit, he, like, punches a guy so hard, he just makes, like, a perfect circle in him. He just, like, punches a hole in him.
Yeah, but that was footage from the actual film.
Oh. Well, they kept that in.
Yeah, because it's hilarious.
It's quite funny. It's just silly.
But that joke isn't... That's, like, make it... outlining the fact that in... these serious kung fu films, there is a bit where someone punches, like, someone out.
Comical violence, okay.
No, not that. No. It's not laughing at comical violence. It's laughing at the fact that in a serious kung fu film, someone put that in to be serious.
Okay.
Right? And so that highlighting that, saying, like, almost, I can't believe, how did no one, like, laugh at this when it was in a serious film? Yeah?
Okay.
So they're pulling bits out of the original footage that are jokes taken out of in this context. Like, maybe in the serious film you didn't actually realise that it was funny.
Yeah. Okay. There's another bit I just thought of that was funny.
You're gonna whisper it.
Oh, it's going to bug me. Oh, yeah. I liked... It's funny how when they got to the training bit and there's like the woman, I think Ling, that, like, fancies Steve's character, the chosen one. Mm. And there's that other guy that's just, like, dead whiny and annoying and kind of fancies Ling. And then Master Tang is just like, oh, yeah, we, like, trained him. Like, he thinks he's really good, but we trained him wrong as a joke. And that's quite funny. There were definitely, like, it had promise, like, as a concept, but just some of it was just too ridiculous.
Well, to be honest, I think if it had been made now, then...
I don't know if it would get made now, exactly.
Well, no, but that's a different conversation.
Yeah.
But I think the jokes that were in it were quite of their time.
Yeah.
As well. Like, this is... pre a lot of humour, just the way that it was in 2002. We probably had films like Not Another Teen Movie and all these parody films, and that was the type of humour at that point.
Yeah. So there are, like I said, I don't know, for me, because it's a kung fu film and then they've basically just inserted a white guy. Like, I don't know if people would be happy about that now.
Can I defend the film a little bit?
I just wanted to say,
pull up the Rotten Tomatoes score.
No, I was trying to remember because I liked the critic's consensus. It was like a short sketch's worth of jokes stretched into a full length feature.
Yeah,
because there were like good little nuggets in there, and like to be fair, the I think it's 13%. The tomato meter, is that like the critics, like the splat? The audience score is 68%. So it has developed this kind of cult following of people that do think it's quite amusing.
Can I defend it now? Yeah. Are you gonna let me defend it?
Yeah, you can defend it, and then maybe that'll help me see why you like it.
Yeah?
That'll help me, yeah.
So it's hard to watch this film in like a post YouTube era, right? Because you already started talking about bad lip reading and things.
Yeah.
Right. But in 2002, and we didn't really have internet, and we certainly couldn't watch videos on them.
No, not
at
really.
At that point.
No. Mm-hmm.
This spawned like quite a lot of sort of following around the internet of people making this type of stuff.
Mm.
And one that I used to always watch was someone did the entire Matrix series basically in this style.
Mm.
But that only started to happen after this film had come out.
Yeah.
Right? And had this come out now, today, it would have just been a YouTube video.
Mm.
Right? It would have just been, it wouldn't have been a, you know, straight to theatres type thing. It's hard to get into the mindset of that nothing else like this had come out. And like that Yu-Gi-Oh! Abridged that I watched, where, you know, they go over the cartoons and they, one guy does all the voices and stuff. This inspired so many like community content that we just take for granted today.
Mm-hmm.
Even, you know, on his tongue, you know, little face.
Mm.
Like for a while, about 10 years ago, there was that series about the orange. Do you remember the orange that had like a face on it? All this stuff that is done after the film obviously came from this film.
Yeah. That's a fair point.
And me being 12 at the time, and in the actual age of that humour, would have been absolutely fine. I found it hilarious.
Yeah. No, I think definitely the concept, you're right, it was kind of, like you go on YouTube now and there's tons of stuff like this, like loads of it. And this was maybe one of the early things.
If you had a concept like this, you'd have to go, right, I need to get funding for this thing to be made.
Mm.
Or I guess you've put it on a VHS and pass it around, hope someone watches it, kind of thing. You couldn't really like make this without someone getting behind the concept. Yeah?
Yeah.
I also thought it would be a good transition from The Matrix as well, because that film is based off a lot of the types of films that this was taken footage from. So if you might know some of the fighting styles and things from that.
Yeah, like the Hong Kong, the action films, yeah.
Even just down to the sound design, the way that it's got that like whoop, 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 whoop. Some of the fighting stances and stuff where he's doing like the crane and the jumps and stuff. That's from whatever, was it House of a Thousand Cranes or something?
Tiger and Crane Fists / Savage Killers.
Yeah. So I thought it'd be good to give you a bit of reference to where some of the bits from The Matrix came from as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No, I think that's fair. Like, there was promise in it. It just had a lot of rubbish in there as well.
So why do you think I like it? I'll probably just talk
my trivia first.
Yeah, do trivia.
My trivia. This first one's not very good.
Well, don't put it in then.
But a lot of them were boring.
Okay.
So the logo for the Evil Council is the same as for British MOT test stations.
Yeah, I knew that.
Okay.
I knew that because I see it when I go into work.
Yeah. And then there's a bit where Master Tang says that he likes NSYNC, the band, and this was in reference to NSYNC providing a song for Steve's previous film that he worked on, which was Jimmy Neutron.
Oh.
Animated film.
I didn't know that. I don't think I've ever seen Jimmy Neutron.
Me neither, and I doubt I will.
I used to watch a series sometimes.
Yeah.
On Nickelodeon.
On Nickelodeon, okay. And then my last fact was, so you've got Steve, who sort of is put in as like the star of the film, and he directed it. the star of the film that Steve kind of replaces, kind of takes his place. He's called Jimmy Wang Yu, who you don't see until kind of the end credits because Steve's always there in his place. He actually was the star of Savage Killers and directed it the same way Steve starred in and directed Kung Pao. Mm.
They follow it in his footsteps.
Yeah.
I didn't know that the person in it was Steve. I've seen his name and the directed by. I didn't realise he was the actor until you started telling me.
Oh, no, that's him.
This.
That's him. Okay. And he did all the voices except for one boob lady.
Yeah, even more trivia.
Yeah.
Okay, and why do you think I like it?
Well, I think you've kind of touched on it, the fact that it was kind of this unique-ish concept at the time, like the lip dubbing and like, well, kind of for comic effects. Obviously, they had dubbed films before, but this whole kind of dubbing over it just to be silly. And and to be fair, like we said, some of the CGI is like bad, but him being like inserted into the footage, it's pretty seamless. Because to start with, I was confused. I was like, what am I watching? I was like, is this old or is this from like, well, 2002 is quite old, but I was like, I was just confused. But all those bits, you wouldn't. Like I was temporarily confused.
Yeah.
So you might not, if you hadn't like known what you were watching, you might think it was one film until you see the really horrendous CGI cow. Mm. So I think you like it. And like you said, it then kind of led the way for so many things like this. And it was kind of, you have just tons of this stuff on YouTube now. But without stuff like this, maybe people wouldn't have realised that kind of thing was funny and wouldn't have done so much of it.
Yeah, I think it's because it's an important film in just in terms of inspiration and what it made way for things to come. But it doesn't necessarily make it a good film.
Yeah, like I say, there's bits in there that are really good. And but there's just some crap as well. Wow, it's just like, is this?
Okay, fine, I'll let you have it. Number two.
Okay. I wrote very silly. So I think, like you said, it's at the age you would have watched it, I think it's perfect kind of teenage boy humour. And I think, you know, maybe if you watched it for the first time now, maybe there's bits you would have cringed at a bit, but you kind of think back when you first watched it and those memories and you just find it funny.
Okay. Yeah.
And there are bits where it's funny. I don't really get a third reason.
Make one up on the spot.
Make one up. You,
based on what I said,
you really like
the one boob. Is that what you're gonna say?
Yeah, but that was a bit weird.
That was a
tasteless joke.
A little bit weird.
Like, what was she there for? She was just a stupid gag about boobs. She served no purpose. Why else did you like it? Based on what you said,
that's for you to think of.
Well, and maybe it inspired you because I know you've previously you have made like YouTube content and sort of comedy things.
Yeah.
So maybe just the whole concept of it appealed to you.
I think so.
There we go.
I'll let you have that one.
Good thinking on the spot there, Sarah. Well done. I'm proud of myself.
That just about concludes Kung Pao?
Yeah, I've said everything.
Yeah.
I wrote lots of dramatic zooms. Mm-hmm. I missed that. Yeah, there was some funny stuff with the camera.
Yeah.
Where they just kept panning across.
That was just one of the jokes.
Yeah, it went on a bit long.
I don't think I've once ever tried to wrap up one of these segments and you go along with it.
Just got so much to say about Kung Pao. And even more to say about Hunchback of Notre Dame because it's just so underrated and it's just amazing.
Okay, that's a different film. Can we wrap up
but
the section
now? I love
now?
It. Yeah, I'm done.
Thank you so much for listening. That was Hunchback of Notre Dame and Kung Pao.
Enter the Fist.
Enter the Fist. And if you would like to follow me on Twitter, I am at Cosmic Onion. And if you'd like to...
send us... I've got the email in front of me. Yeah, if you've got any questions or want to send us an email, you know, any suggestions or anything you'd like to contribute or just, you know...
Get in touch.
Yeah. It is fanmail@goodvibesfilmclub.com. And yeah, maybe I'll reply if I feel like it.
That's one more time.
fanmail@goodvibesfilmclub.com. I'm saying vibes. Mm-hmm. It's just because we kept saying vibe before. It's not a Z. It's vibes, V-I-B-E-S, like with you would expect. S. With an S.
We're not.
No Zs.
We're not 90s.
No, there's no Zs in this.
And we do have a Patreon, and that's patreon.com/goodvibesfilmclub. And if you would like to donate $1 a month, we do reward you with some bonus content. And obviously that dollar goes a long way, even though we give you the content for free. This is your chance to get some extra content.
Some excellent extra content. you don't want to miss it.
And these microphones and studio equipment, they didn't appear out of nowhere. We did buy them at our own money.
Lol, you did.
But you know, $1 would help go to get those costs back.
Everyone's gonna think I'm such a cow.
No, I just really like audio equipment. So,
I did buy you a new lunchbox today. Let's not forget, that cost me $4.99.
you don't want to miss that. So, you know, if you did enjoy the show, or if you didn't, just give us a review. We appreciate your honest feedback. And tell your friends, tell your mum, tell your cat, tell your dog.
Yeah.
Tell people if
always talk
to get
to
on
the
board
dog.
with the Films Club. Okay, so what films can we expect to listen to next week, Sarah?
Well, your film that I'm going to talk about, one of your favourites, is Groundhog Day, which, lovely film. I've not watched it for a while. I'm excited for that.
And nice film. Your favourite film that I'm doing is Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah, so a bit dark.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, just if you're not into sort of horror films, this neither are we. So if you haven't watched it and you want to give Cabin in the Woods a go, I would recommend it.
Mm-hmm.
Not really too spooky. It's a bit more, it's more fun than spooky.
It's got fun elements, but
save it for the show.
But there is some gore. I think it's a 15, like, is the like British.
So if you're under 15, ask your parents.
Yep.
Before watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you so much for listening. We will see you next time.
See you there.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.